Welcome to the Shut Up and Ride podcast. Oh my God, why do I always start this laughing? I am obviously with Ben and Simon, and we are doing our first live one. This feels a bit weird because there's cameras. So anyone listening to this on audio and not watching it on the YouTube channel, if we sound a bit weird, it's because we're doing it live in someone's home. I have interviewed this man, I would say, God, in so many different countries, in front of massive audiences. We've done it live in front of huge audiences in theatres for charities. I've interviewed him at Olympics. But on this podcast, I'm interviewing him as my friend. It is the brilliant, the wonderful. He is as lovely as he comes across. It is Carl Hester. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
That's a pleasure. It is like a radio show I've always wanted to be on. There's so many things to say. There's so many things to talk about. There's so many things that in interviews, like you said, that all the things we've talked about over the years that we never, you're always talking about performances, aren't you? And all the things we've
Yes.
done mostly,
How
especially with shows.
was that
But
centre line, Carl? How did it
exactly.
feel? Yeah.
Well, I always say the right thing there, don't you? Because you have to, and that's competing. You have to say the right thing, and you have to be aware that, like every little thing that you talk about, people, take literally. So I
Yes,
always think,
literally.
like you've got to be careful what you say. And I've learned that over the years. Probably better to say nothing at some points than everything, but I'm sure tonight will be different. So let's
Well, we'll see.
see.
And I've got to ask, how well do you know these two gorgeous gentlemen?
I know them actually. Simon and I, have communicated for a few years. I know about his venting. I follow them both, so on social
Do
media, so
you
I know what
follow
they're
his
doing.
YouTube channel?
I don't. I actually don't do YouTube, so his YouTube channel will be brand new to me.
It is very new. It's
It is
only been
new.
in
It's
existence
only
for
oh,
2 weeks.
okay. Well, that's
So
why.
you're doing okay. It's okay.
That's why. And Ben, I've actually been at Your Horse Live with. I met him and his wife there a few years ago when he was doing his thing. Both amazing, both fantastic. I love all sorts of a question. So I am not actually, I'm a dressage person, but I'm not. I'm quite happy to go and do a day's racing, a day's eventing, go and watch Ben do his shows. I'm interested in all of it. I love all of it.
And tennis, as we were just talking about.
Tennis,
You
nothing to
do
do with the
love a bit of
question.
tennis.
I don't know why.
Do you think because it's
I
so
say
different?
I just think it's just so easy for me to watch, and I can follow it. I understand it. I play tennis
Is it like in or out? It's
badly.
easy
Well,
to
I
follow.
am.
I totally get that because I love, like, well, I'm a bit bad because it's when Wimbledon comes on, I become slightly obsessed with it. It's
Me
just
too. Me
such a
too.
great
Yeah.
sporting event. I love
But
it.
when I play, I'm a proper dressage rider. I only stand on the centre line, so I stand
The
at A or C, and you have to hit the
ball
ball
has come
to
to
me.
you.
You have to hit the ball to me. And then I hit it back. So I'm not probably the best competitor, but I am. If you just want to lose some weight and play for an hour, then you'd probably play with me. As long as you don't. And I like going corner to corner. So I make you run around, but you don't make me run around. You know how it works.
It's just a leisurely, like, you in the
If that
middle.
doesn't happen, then you don't get invited. Yeah.
Exactly. But I have been lucky, in 2012, after London, we got invited to Wimbledon. And all gold medalists get invited, I think every year actually, from Olympics, and they all get invited to a day in the Royal Box. It was just fantastic. My dentist was sat a few rows outside the
This is the
Royal
most
Box.
random
And she
conversation I've ever
texts me and
had.
she said, "What the hell are you doing in the Royal Box?" So anyway, I get my message. So I thought, show those teeth that she'd been cleaning so well. So I just turned and I said, "Where are you sitting?" So she said, "On your left." So I turned and gave her a great big smile. And she was sat there. It was my birthday on the day I went, so it was 29th of June. And so Sue Barker, who was obviously
Legend.
hosting, I mean, is a legend, you're right. So she announced my birthday, and I stood up,
Oh
and Wimbledon gave me a
wow.
clap. So I kind of have an affinity with
Oh,
tennis,
that is
probably because
so
I love
special.
it.
Super special. Yeah.
It was really special. Yeah, really, really special. A special moment, which London, did for so many people.
That is
Treats.
It's really
Yeah.
important because Carl's not had a chance to have many special moments in front of lots of people.
Never.
But some that as you get older, Ben, so your memory gets a little bit worse, so you don't remember many of those special moments. But it's interesting. I always think of the Wimbledon one.
Do you think that maybe that's as well because there's no pressure in that one? There you were just being, if there's a difference, like my wife jokes and says, I'm Ben and Ben Atkinson. And the difference of
Yeah.
being able to just be Carl and not like the Carl Hester. Like, just being able to go to places like that and just be like, oh, I'm just me. There's no sponsors watching. I can do it as a
live. Well, that's true. But it's also, it is also lovely meeting, you know, like, you, we are also wrapped up in sports, in our sports, should I say.
Yeah.
And having opportunities, which these things give you, to meet other sports people. And just talk about your journeys. Just talk about, you know, your commitments. Talk about, you know, what you give up in your life, what you get out of your life. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever met anyone in, certainly in equestrian sports, that hasn't, that love is still the thing that makes them do it. You know, I mean, they're still the love of their job.
Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, I mean, I went to a school where I can't remember anyone out of 700 odd people doing horses. Or ended up doing horses, obviously, yeah, my career. But they all, so they all work in banks and, you know, job, real jobs.
Proper jobs, yes. Yeah.
But marketing. Do any of them love it? No, so few of them love it. So it's really interesting because sports people seem to love what they do.
Yeah.
And so many people that don't, you know, didn't get a chance to, like, pick a job that they really wanted.
But we're so lucky, aren't we? Because we've got longevity with it as well. Yeah. Like, most sports, you kind of, like... You're retiring.
So is a bank manager. So, so that, but they still don't love it. So like, kind of, well, that says it all, doesn't it? I mean, you're making more money as you get older, presumably, when you're in the money industry. You know, and I come from the Channel Islands. You know, it was very much a, you know, career that people went into, banking and, yeah, and stuff like that. So, yeah.
You've just broken the mold from there. But do you feel like, when you, like you say, when you go to those places and you're seeing these other athletes, is there a level of also, because we've said this, haven't we? We spoke to Becky Moody on our podcast and she came back and she was like, we went to this big party and they were all like having a month off, going around the Caribbean or going somewhere, having 6 months off, they'll be training again next summer. But horses, you don't get that. You have to stay, yeah, on top of it, on forms. Is there ever a level of like kind of competitive jealousy with these other sportsmen who get to kind of have a bit of downtime?
Well, no, not at all. So I think from what we've just said, I mean, that's what I love doing. So
yeah,
I have enough time. I mean, my favourite, you know, one of my favourite quotes is always, you know, never get too busy making a living. You forget to make a life. I mean, oh, it's a,
oh, that's a good one. He loves
it's a good way to, it's a good way to live. And, you know, like, I'm sure this will attract, as all things do, a lot of social media. And then you get people that don't like you or people that say things about you. My other favourite quote there is, it's none of your business what other people think about you. If you live like that, actually, it's quite good because then you stop worrying about what other people think about you because it is none of your business. They, yeah, will think what they think. So those are my two, those are two quotes I actually try and live by. That one for social media and that one for my work balance on life.
But maybe, that, I think, like, however much I say to myself when I see someone slagging me off on a website, or, oh, she's so dull, or she one of them was, doesn't look like she could have fun in a bar. I was like, you come to a bar, love, I'll show
not,
you.
Not that, yeah, she remembers,
yeah,
that.
I don't remember. I've got more written down. I know who their social media handle, yeah, is. And you say that, but I find that, I do find that's quite difficult. I do find that it does, yeah, sit with me. Am I really that boring? Am, yeah, I really that much of a prat?
Get to my level where you just, like, block them all. They're blocked. They're all blocked. I don't read it now because it's blocked. I would read it if I didn't block it. So that's quite like, yeah, I haven't got the strength to not read it if I can.
That's interesting.
But blocking it gives me the strength. I'll do 5 days of, like, I want to know what they're doing. And then I'll say to someone else, what are they saying? What are they saying? Can you see what they're saying? And then finally I'm like, no, it's gone. It's left me. I don't need to see it anymore. It's gone.
And Carl, so you're talking about the life balance thing. Do you think that you've achieved that?
Yeah,
you think, like, because you were saying you taught 11, yeah, lessons today. Like,
11?
That's
yeah,
like, that's...
but I do, this doesn't happen every day. So, you know, because I'm running, but I try and, like, the work balance for my horses also is 4 days a week. I don't work them 7 days a week. They do 4 days a week. So then I have other days where I can, you know, do a full day of teaching or something. But no, I really, as I've got older, you know, Sunday lunch.
I was going to say, have you always been like that?
Or no,
so you didn't have the right balance before?
No, and it ruined a lot of things in my life. It ruins relationships, yeah, you know, it ruins friendships, you know, because you haven't got time to see people. So it's helped me, that saying, really, which I know just sounds like ridiculous, but it's helped me. It's helped me, like, see my friends more often, make efforts. And I mean, I'm glad I've still got friends. You know, I'm going to be 58 this year. So I am glad that I still have a really big group of friends from my 20s. Mm-hmm. And I think we all think that's important. It doesn't matter who did what, but I still have that group of friends because I try and make an effort, as they do. You know, like everybody's working. They could easily do. They could say what I say. Oh, I'm riding every day. I haven't got time to see you. But they don't.
Have you got any friends who still don't know what the fuck you do? We've all got
well,
them.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yes. I suppose so. And yeah, I mean, you
those
know,
are the best.
But
friends.
Isn't that quite good? Because yeah. I mean, like, say they'd be like my old school friends. If I go back to the Channel Islands or something, you know, it's a no-no. I mean, I can't go in and sit down to dinner and go, "Oh, my half past was just a nightmare today." Couldn't get that bend. Because they would just be like, but just like they can't say to me, their money figures just don't add up. So I'd be like, good. What are we having to eat?
Yeah.
You know, so like, you know, so you're just friends, you know. So you can talk about most things and I don't mind they don't know what I do. Doesn't matter, does it?
That's what levels you, because you do have a lot of people.
It really does. Yeah. So this story is absolutely true. So I go back to SARP after London, right? And so I went to school in Sark. So we were 25 kids in a school. So, you know, one teacher. So I hadn't been back for a while. And my grandmother was still alive then. She lived on Sark. And my grandmother had a mouth like a foghorn. She told everybody everything I did and whenever I did it. And she put, if I was in the Horse and Hound, she'd rip the page out and put it up in the, you know, like in the news agents or whatever. A big supporter. But I went back there and I took a group of friends back there because I was like, no, but people need to go and see Sark.
Yeah.
If you have never been, because
it's actually
you can't
a bucket
quite believe
list, isn't it?
It's yeah. still, but it's still almost as it was. No cars. And so I took this group of friends and we went into a tea garden to have like lunch or something. So the girl coming towards us, I was like, it's Vanessa. I used to go to school with her. So Vanessa comes over, she goes, so she speaks, there's 10 of us sitting there, she goes, hi, can I take your order? She says anything to me. So everyone's like ordering everything and then she gets round to me at the end of it and then she said, can I take your order? And I went, Vanessa, hi, don't you remember me? And she was like, yeah, hi Carl, how are you? It meant absolutely nothing to what I'd been, I hadn't been on the island for 25 years, I'd left the island, you know, 20 odd years ago. She was just like, and I like that. I actually quite liked it. At the minute, I was a bit like, oh, she's not going to say, what have you been doing? Where have you been? What's happening? I quite liked it. I was like, that's actually, this is it. You know, this is, they don't care. They don't care what I've done. Apart from the fact, you know, the only thing I feel, the best thing I've done is be an ambassador for the place I've come from.
Yeah.
As in like, you know, tourism in the Channel Islands, you know, go to the Channel Islands if you've never been. It's fantastic.
Secretly, she might have been like, do you know how many people coming in? Do you know Carl Heston? So secretly, she's like, they hate him.
Yeah, she gave me what was due. But I mean, that is, you know, people's, you know, perception of what you do is not always what you think it is.
Well, and having those mates that are away from it. So, like, my two best mates I've known since I was about 3 years old. And one of them's a musician and one of them does, like, landscaping and he's a mechanic and all that sort of thing. I don't know anything about any, like you say, about any of the things they do. They know I do horses. But it's lovely when you see those people because it actually is an escape from
have
work.
They come and seen what you do? Because,
yeah.
I mean, you have a spectacular job.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
No, but it's spectacular, isn't it? It's a spectacular show you put on. So, like, if your friends, even if they knew nothing about what you did, I mean, it's a spectacular.
Yeah, no, and they get it. Like,
do
that.
They come and watch?
They'll come and watch, and they've come and they've given a hand. Like, if I've been, you know, because we do these big productions and stuff, and so if I'm, like, low on the ground, I'm like, Parrot, JD, come on, come and dress as a Roman soldier and stand in the back of a chariot. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
And so they get it like that, but they just aren't. It's nice to have those people disconnected from it.
But I think what's interesting as well, like, I mean, like the job that you have as an, because you're an entertainer, basically.
Yeah, basically.
So, like meeting you, not knowing you very well, but meeting you, you know, you're obviously like quite a gentle soul and quite peaceful and all that. But you actually stand up there and I know how difficult that is to stand up there and in front of all those people and be, you know, you're being paid to entertain. So you can't just shut up and just say, oh, look at me riding a horse, I'm fantastic. You've got to make them laugh. You've got to tell them what you're doing. Your animals have to do spectacular things. I mean, so your friends might have their jobs, but I mean, actually what you do, I think, is like far more, I don't know what the word I'm looking for. It's just hard. It's just a much harder job to like be this personality.
It's hard, but it's. I think from like our aspect of the horse world, there are some parts that make it so much easier. As in, so like I was performing at Hoy's for a week. There are 7 performances over the week. I'm meant to do the same show within reason every time. the first three shows were the same, the last three shows were the same. But when I went in for that fourth show in the middle of the week, I could feel that my horses had gone sour. So I just had a giggle to myself and thought, well, I hope the boys on the spotlights are awake because we're going rogue. And just did stuff that I knew the horses would rather do that day. Yeah. And so, like, within reason, that's much easier for me because there's not a set course of jumps. There's not a set test. My job is to make people smile.
But that's what people don't realise. So, like, if you're doing a five-day show, like London, this is what I realised this year when I was watching that guy at London this year. And somebody said, oh, he's doing two. And I was there a 3 days into the show. Yes. 5 days, he has to do this. Twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people pay a ticket to go into a show, right? And they expect the best.
Yeah.
You cannot have an off day.
You've got to be on point. Yeah.
So day three, and I was watching these horses, and I'd heard he'd fallen off. I think he had a fall the day before.
Yeah, one of nasty those. Fall.
You know, not nice. But people have paid to go in, and they do want to see what the person the day before saw.
Yeah.
It's like going to a show in London, isn't it? I mean, if you're going to...
You watch Les Mis, you want to be
You presume it's, you know, like they have to be on form all the time.
Yeah.
It's an amazing job that people do.
Do you think, and it's like with non-horsey friends, it's less impressive because when you work with horses, you know how hard it is to actually train them. So when I see you guys doing your thing to the level you guys do it, I'm in utter awe because I think all of you are absolute geniuses. But do you think if you've never been around horses or worked with them, you don't really know how hard it is? So maybe it's not as impressive for someone who's not horsey. I don't know. Is it more impressive for horsey people or less impressive?
Well, totally. Eventing, for instance, Simon's doing a really physical job, right? Yeah, it's dangerous. It's dangerous and it's physical.
What a lad.
Words that have never been spoken about Simon. What a lad.
Right. Yeah. But so yours is an entertainment. My job is to make it look like I'm not doing anything.
Yes.
So that's worse, actually, because I mean the horse is doing a lot of the work. Of course it is, but I'm trying to communicate.
That's definitely where I go wrong with myself because I come out sweating and
That's one of your favours. But of course you can then show your prowess over the jumps and your cross country. That's what you're really. So it's very visual, and yours is very visual. I mean mine. Kind of like feel like I'm supposed to like do nothing. The horse has to look doing everything. It's supposed to be peaceful and calm. And so I do understand why a lot of my friends who are not horsey would look at it and be like,
can't get fit doing that.
Good God. And he calls himself an athlete.
For us, even more frustratingly, there's a lot of stuff in performance, whether it's like the liberty stuff or the stunt stuff with the horses, where we have certain tricks that we'll say are for other people in the industry. Because it's phenomenally hard to train, like even more ridiculously hard to pull off in a show environment. Yeah. And the crowd will see it and just be like, hmm. Yeah. Whereas the other professionals in the audience will watch it and they're like, oh my God, like this is insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you'll do something so basic, like for us, like what should be like a level one thing, which is like walk the horse in and bow it or lay it down. And everyone's like, oh, yes. And so sometimes that can be heartbreaking because you're like, I've spent 2 years working on this and I just did it and none of you even clapped. And then I did something that I've been able to do since I was nine and you're all like...
Yeah.
Anyone could stand on it, Ben. Don't all stay on.
Yeah. You know, you've been to Your Horse Live. So the best thing that happened to me at Your Horse Live, I did Your Horse Live quite a few years in a row.
Yeah.
And it's quite difficult coming up every year with something different. So,
are you not entertained?
But we would take, I would be like, you know, I had these fabulous dressage horses that I would take. And, you know, I remember taking Horton Stellicato, who went on to the World Games and Europeans. And he was amazing. He was 6 or 7 years old and he was a picture. He was like a show horse. And he came in and Amy Woodhead was riding for me at the time. And Amy shows him off beautifully. And I'm like, I mean, he's an eye force. I'm doing this demo and I'm watching him. And I'm like, this horse. Guys, is a future like championship horse. I mean, look at him. How can you? And they liked it, you know. They liked it. But in the afternoon, I then had to come back for my second demo, and I took a coloured cob.
Oh yeah.
And this coloured cob was fabulous. He had this huge hair from his knees down, like the hair was like this. So she comes in, she's trotting around, and the crowd. I could immediately already feel the difference in the atmosphere for the love for this cob. Yeah. So I said to her, what can't you do? She said, you just can't do length and strides. Quite normal, you know, like with a cob, because they're very, you know, action, aren't they? They're this way.
They're designed to pull from the chest, aren't they?
Yeah. So I said to her, show us everybody. And then my dad, like, there was 1,000 people there. And so she goes down alongside and she goes for it. And it's like, chip chop, chip chop, chip chop, chip chop. And I was like, no, I see a problem. So I said, right, come around the short side. And then I said, listen, crowd. I said, when she comes around the short side, when she hits that corner, I want you all to clap. I said, like, burst into applause. So she comes around the corner, this cover, not again. And then I say, okay, clap. And the crowd just clapped. And this cob took off in an extended trot like you've never seen.
Out here, like, it's so and it was cool. Like,
I mean, they went mad. Yeah, they loved it. And you know, it was almost like the end of the demo. I need to stop there and then. So they were all laughing and crying with laughter and joy. And I said, actually, this is really like what normal people want to see, you know, yeah, like, yeah. Because they can relate to that. And they related to this cob. And I could relate the fact that, well, actually, it's all about impulsion. You've just given it the impulsion to give it the chance to do this movement. That's what the horse has just learned. So don't ever think that, you know, because your horse moves like that, it can't do it. It's all about this word impulsion, which is really important in dressage. So it was just, you know, like it made me realise that day then, you know, like it's no good showing all the... It's not all about what's perfect, what's great, what's marvellous. Because most people don't have a life like that, you know, or train horses like that. You know, as you were just saying, you'll have days where you can't do anything about the fact that they're not tuned in or ready or had enough, like I said, sour earlier.
Yeah,
I mean, you can get it.
You are, having interviewed you, I know you, I'll never forget when you first met me and you were doing some... thing with the Spanish riding school, and I met you at something, and you were like, oh, I've got tickets, do you want to come? I'll give you my number, you can text me later if you could come. And I was like, oh my god, Carl has to just go. I've known you on camera, off camera, but I feel like you are the kind of person, you will always put a smile on it. So even if it's been a disaster, you are very good at, you'll always do media, you'll always do press, you are very good at kind of going, right, this is my job, that part of it. How hard is it when it is shit and when, like, you know, sometimes we do just go, do you know what? Even though it looks on paper that was good, it might not have been.
Yeah.
How are you mentally, like, after a show? Like, are you the kind of person who can, like, pocket it, look at it, or are you the kind of person who goes back and goes, beats yourself up about it? How are you, like, because what I see is someone who's always got it together. Like...
It mostly goes well. So, like, so when it
that'll be me just getting back.
But
in
my
the
most,
box.
Well, all I'm just saying
I'm
is,
I'm unaware what a bad round feels like.
That sounded well. It was supposed to actually sound okay because I was about to say it mostly goes well because, and I'm not saying there's mostly go well and mostly go well. My mostly go well isn't about winning a gold medal, a silver medal, or a bronze medal. My mostly go well is if the horse did the best it can, I can be positive, okay. Right? So that is my positivity.
Wow. Yeah, that is.
So, nice. And I learned
you've
that.
You pulled that back, by the way.
No, because I'm going to tell you another story in a minute, so,
okay.
Which isn't a go well. But so the reason I got to that stage in my life to think about that was when I had Nip Tuck, who was, you know, who struggled to do the job, but his intelligence and his brain made him the best he could be. And then I had Charlotte on Bellegro, who was the superstar and who was winning medal after medal after medal. You know, nobody could get near him. And I started thinking, I mean, I can't keep going home thinking, oh, you know, I'm 10th. Mm. You know, this was a disaster, or 11th or 12th, wherever I came. And I suddenly thought, no, actually, I've got to stop doing this. This horse did the best he could do. There was nothing else I could do, nothing else he could do. So, do you know what? I'm going to turn... my head has got to be, he just won his gold medal. And I won mine with him. So
that
stopped me. No, it's not hard, actually. It's not hard. When you actually get your head around it, it's fine.
Okay.
Because I'd also had Utopia, you know, and I've had other medal horses. So it was fine because I've had it. Having won a medal, an individual medal as well, that's fine. Your boxes are ticked. So then every horse is a bonus and not every horse is going to be a superstar. So that's what I mean about it mostly goes well for me because I just think, because all the horses that came after that still didn't win medals were still really good on the day, so that was all fine. You know, last year was, you know, again, considering the circumstances we were under with Paris, it went well. It couldn't have gone better considering the circumstances.
Amazing. Yeah.
But the surrounding, you know, like the press coverage and the media and everything was, you know, taught me a real lesson because, I mean, you have to be really strong to go and stand out there and talk about it and talk about how the team had evolved and what's happened. But you must always look for the positive story. So Becky, who you've interviewed, Becky Moody, was our positive story. And I was like, that's what I'm dealing with.
She radiates positivity.
She does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean...
And a hot bomb, she told us, that you dealt with very well.
Oh, my God. You know, I mean, Becky will tell you herself. I mean, like, this was like, right, you need to think of something really quick here. You need to start coming up with ideas, you know, how we're going to get this horse to relax and settle. And what sort of talking to are you going to give Becky? Because I'm not a, you know... I wasn't until then, actually. I'm quite sort of like, it's all going to be fine. So, and I was like, right, lady, you listen to me. You've got to pull yourself together. And, you know, this is how it's going to be. You rode yourself onto that team. So you've got to do it. And that horse is brilliant. And we're going to get our heads around it. So it's very difficult to, you know, to learn how to deal with situations where her head's blowing because the horse is blowing. It was all a lot to take in, and of course she delivered these amazing performances, and that was my story of positivity that came out of, you know, a very difficult situation. So, you know, like, you, that's what you have to look for when things are difficult. There's always a positive, you know, that you can take for it. And at the end of the day, we're all, you know, having to promote and sell our sport to a lot of people that don't understand it, don't like it. Mm-hmm. Of course, we all have a huge following in the sport, but those aren't the people you need to sell it to.
Yeah, they're on board.
They're already there. Yeah. And I mean, to be honest, like I don't know your backstory. I mean, you've told me yours tonight. I know my friends' backstories, and there's so many brilliant stories of people that are from non-horsey families that made it anyway. Came through in a different way. Mm. Becky, you know, been chipping away for 20 years. I mean, God, could you have given up? Yes.
Well, she'd always kind of said she would be the bridesmaid and never the bride.
Here she is. But I didn't win my first medal until I was around 40. Yeah. So, I just got used to going to shows and thinking, well, we never went to the prize giving. So, I mean, I was just like, right, well, at least we can go home early. What time's that last class? And we'll go home then. You know, we didn't have to stay, you know, because we didn't win anything. And then suddenly you win something and your life just changes like that. Because then you're like, actually, I need to win more of that now. And that's, you know, that's what happens.
Do you think that's where you are fortunate? Because I watch a lot of sport documentaries. I mean, The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Oh, things like that. Amazing. But most people's sporting careers in most other sports is over by 30-ish. Yeah. If you're in cricket, 36 is great. Yeah. Football, I wouldn't be sure. Rugby, 32, you're doing well. Do you think because horse riding gives you that longevity in the sport, this is how you've become so wise? Were you this wise in your 20s?
No, of course not.
Yeah, so you've...
Of course not.
What a luxury. Right.
Yeah, so I got to the age of winning and I'd already been doing the sport for 20-odd years.
Yeah.
So I knew a lot about how it worked and what was going on, and I knew a lot of winners and I knew a lot of losers, and I loved the losers, by the way. They were my friends because I spent all the time with them.
The wins so much more special as well because you know how hard it is to achieve.
Yeah. But I mean, I was at the bottom for years with people at the bottom. And, you know, so you get that. And that, let's face it, is the pyramid. That's the bottom of the pyramid because most people start there at that bottom bit. So you're all swimming around together, swilling around. Some of you will be able to climb up it and some of you will stay there and some of you might go halfway up.
Yeah.
But I loved my time at the bottom, of the pyramid because, you know, like we were just all, you know, in it together. And the top one, you have to be so careful that when you're at the top, you don't become unobtainable or exclusive or, you know, different.
I found that with young riders.
Like, but being at the top of events, exciting.
Were
you a successful young rider?
No, that really helped me with my career, like how to make it into a proper business.
Right.
Because I found it quite a few times with like the young riders that were hugely successful at the beginning. And it came quite easy to them, whereas I was kind of busy, like working quite hard and not getting the results. And they end up giving up. because when it starts going a bit wrong, it's really hard for them to lose. Whereas like when I started doing well, not that I've won anything particularly big, but like, you know, when I started doing well,
nine times around Burley is pretty fucking impressive. And I just
amazing.
Say, I know, right? And on horses, I'm sorry, that are not always that easy.
There are things that impress me. Five star eventing. You know, like, I mean, it is impressive because I still feel so many people who watch it on telly have no idea what it's like standing under a five-star fence.
I did have that with... I qualified to go five-star when I was, 20, I think. And then that horse went wrong, and so I never got there. And then I didn't manage to qualify again for another 11 years. And it was a real slog through that. So when I actually did qualify for it, and I realised how incredibly hard it was to be able to qualify a horse to do it, let alone actually get there. So that made me, every single time, I'm so boring, I keep on going about it. I've done 18 five stars, and every single one I appreciated, and I loved and enjoyed.
18 is such a big number.
Yeah.
I know.
How old are you?
42.
Oh, well done.
So I've done it in like 12 years.
That's pretty good, isn't
it? It's fucking amazing. And honestly, I guarantee there's not many people who could do what he can do on some of the horses he's ridden.
Yeah.
Like, he does.
A specialist.
And he won't sing. You do a little bit know how good you are, because you occasionally give us little insights of, no, do you know what? I know that horse is tricky and I did it well.
I've told you that story about when I went to see the Grand Jury at Hoe, which was the last five star I did. To have a conversation with them about something.
After your dress, did you say, do you know how difficult my horse is? You should have given me 10% more, because it's difficult.
Exactly.
Madam, before you write that score, would you like to ride this thing?
Exactly. Yes, that as well, yeah.
But I went to see this Grand Jury, and the chairman of the Grand Jury, I can't remember her name, she said, how many five stars have you done? And I said, well, actually, this is my 18th. And she was like, wow, that's amazing. And then one of the other Grand Jury members said, yes, and he's done it on some very average horses.
Oh.
And I was like, I'm not quite sure whether I should take that as a compliment.
Anything going around five stars surely is not average.
I've had some really spectacularly good ones and some ones that aren't quite so brilliant. Yeah. But, yeah.
But not average to go around a five star. Could you ever say that?
No, you can't. No. Like, and it's all up there.
It's like a horse at Grand Prix, isn't it? I mean, it can't be average.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got to have the will to do it and the brain to do it. I think the brain's the most important thing. Physically, they might not move that well, or their jumping technique might not be amazing.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what he was angling
for. Yeah.
Do you think you have a respect for eventers because your eventing career didn't go in that direction?
Yeah, I mean, my eventing career was simply ended because I chose dressage and I wasn't allowed to event anymore.
Do you think you could have done a five-star?
No, probably not. No, probably not. And it was interesting because, I mean, I went back to eventing after dressage. And so, of course, I then realised, I mean, I think I got a 12 in the dressage.
All right.
And then I like,
never got a sub-30.
So I was like, oh, this will give me a bit of room to go slowly.
Perfect.
But that was my first event after I had done dressage. Anyway, it was fine. I mean, I just remember going cross country and I got around, I did win it. Right, but I remember, but I watched the video back afterwards, and I go to the bottom of nearly every fence because I had become so dressagey. I was like, wait, and now I can't see it anyway, so wait again. And I watched the video afterwards, and I just thought, I haven't let go. I have not let that horse go. I have literally like strangled it to the bottom of every fence and then galloped. Bust out between every fence, and then got to the fence and gone, no, I can't let go. Come here. Jump here. And I mean, I just thought, I am going to either hurt a horse or hurt myself.
At least you had the foresight to see that.
I think we all get that feeling. I remember having that feeling 1 year. I did Burley 1 year when I'd been injured. Well, I had a DVT, so I had to not ride for 3 months. But I was determined I was still going to go to Burley, and I came off the drugs so I could do the last prep run for the horse, and I was on warfarin.
Yeah.
Oh. And
so you can't possibly afford to like cut yourself on that, surely?
Exactly. Yeah. Or fall off and bash your head. And then 2 days after I came off the warfarin, I did the horse's last run before Burley, which was my first event back, and I actually hadn't jumped. Well, I jumped about 2 days before. And so I jumped fence 2 on the cross country, came around the corner. Sorry, I'm going off on one now.
I love a tangent. It's brilliant.
Okay.
Don't forget, Jenny has the cut.
Yes, exactly.
So this story may never be heard.
Not today. We've got Harry on the audio and the edit and the mic, so the wonderful Harry Sykes. So he's in charge. So if he thinks you're boring as fuck, then
he can turn off. But, you know, so came out, having not been cross-country at all, came out of the start box, jumped the fence too, and I was like, yes, this is amazing. I'm back. Went round the corner, horse slipped over and knocked me out. And my partner at the time came running over to the paramedics as I was waking up and said, oh, by the way, he came off warfarin 2 days ago.
He doesn't want revival.
Yeah, exactly. He definitely said that.
DNR. He has a DNR. Has anyone told you? That's why it's your ex partner. Yeah.
Exactly. You need to think about who you choose as a past from now on.
So then I was banned for 21 days, and that took me over past Burley, and I was like, I really want to do Burley. Like, having not ridden for 3 months, like, this is the stupidest idea ever. But anyway, so I managed to get it so that my ban was shortened. So it was raised on the Monday of Burley. So I arranged to do an open intermediate at Kiso on the Monday, and then I moved into Burley on the Tuesday, and then I rode around. And sorry, wow. The reason I was thinking about it was I remember in the cross country warm up circling away because I couldn't see a stride in the warm up at Burley Horse Trail. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Oh my God, I feel sick.
And then I set off. You interviewed me afterwards, I think. Anyway, so I came out the start box and I decided that I was going to jump fence one. Then I can run jump fence two. But the reason I was thinking about this story was, like, I did have a run out that year because you jumped a ditch and then it was a curve on 4 strides. I don't think it was like a brush. And I jumped the ditch and I was like, oh, there's another one. Oh, and another one. And another one.
Yeah.
I got to like 7 strides and the horse was like, mate, we can't do this.
You cannot ride backwards at that level, can you?
No.
So I'm already riding backwards down the intermediate and I thought, never, there's no point.
Intermediate's still pretty bloody big.
It was big enough for me. I mean, having
big enough for most people, thank you very much.
I got going by the time I got to the Trout Hatchery. I was like, oh, I've got this now.
And did you finish?
Finished, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was the most amazing. I can't believe I did it.
Was that Splash?
No, Corner Crew.
Corner Crew.
Was it? Yeah. That was 2013.
Did I interview you?
I'm pretty sure you did.
That must have been very thin, Jenny. Tight top wearing Jenny back then, as Ben likes to call it.
Tight top Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many inappropriate outfits back in those days.
TTJ.
Yeah.
Go and get your interview from Jenny. She's the lady down there with all the skin out.
Yeah. Oh my God, come on, those pictures.
The really pretty one.
Oh no, definitely not. So I think one of the other things we were like wanting to talk about is, again, the side of you that people don't see is you behind the scenes. Are you as lovely and as chilled and approachable in the real world? And
is that a silly question? That can't be a real question.
Yes, you are. Well, I know you in the real world, but you are like...
Listen, I'm from a normal family. I've got normal friends. I have a normal life. I love people. I think everyone's got something interesting to say.
You do ask questions. Right. People don't ask questions, Carl. But you do. You are genuinely
interested in what everyone else does because, I mean, it's part of my life to be like that. I mean, but also, I suppose, because I am in a situation where we do a lot of public stuff and, you know, if you don't interact with people, who wants to know you? I mean, you've got to, like, talk to people and...
Oh, I think you'd be surprised. It's very rare.
I don't know. I mean, I enjoy doing what I'm doing and I enjoy listening to other people and... I am social. So I think if you have that, I mean, being unsocial must be a nightmare for people that have to be pushed into situations. I mean, you know, I mean, we literally do something every night, every day. You know, we're just always doing stuff. I'm about to embark on 3 weeks in New Zealand. You know, it'll be going around every day, visiting all the people that I used to know there, you know, when I used to work
in
the
90s. You're like a member of the royal family. You've got to shake hands with people.
No, not at all. These are like old friends. I love it because these are all the people that knew me before I was, you know, like won an event or won a medal or anything. I mean, they're just like,
you are famous.
They're the people that I want to see again, you know, like, and we will have a nice time. So I think it just depends on your personality. I mean, being social is either in you or isn't it?
But Jenny's talking about your perception or how you come across as a really lovely guy. And I'm rewinding back in my life. When between the ages of kind of like 13 and 21, I was kind of carrying around a bit of a secret well, quite a big secret. The fact that I was gay, and I remember being isn't inspired the right word? I suppose, yeah, probably by yourself, Carl, as a gay man in the equestrian world as well, and Blythe Tate, and Terry Boone actually, and that you guys had it sussed. My perception of you guys was that you had it sussed and that you were living this life as a gay person, and it was all okay, and that really helped me to kind of come out in the end. Did you have it sussed?
That's really cool that you say that, because I mean, you don't feel that you're influencing anybody over things like that, because it's your life, you know, it's just how your life turns out. Did I have it sussed? I think what I got sussed was, if I don't care, no one else will. I think that's what I learned quite early on. You know, I don't make a fuss about it, no one else will make a fuss about it. And it's interesting, because obviously I didn't so much as talk to the press, I didn't talk to people. Well, my friends knew, of course they did, and it was all fine. But I actually, my first, you know, relationship with somebody older than me who was educated, who was like, had been in fashion, who, you know, had another life also outside of horses, and who wasn't going to tolerate anyone being silly about this sort of thing. You know, just like, listen, this is the way you are. Live your life. Be happy. Who cares? Your parents don't care. Why would you care? So I had a lot of positivity around me, so I didn't need to do anything other than just be myself.
And did you find that that positivity was accentuated because you were in the equine industry? Because I've found it so... I've never had a problem with it.
No.
I've had problems with it in away from horses.
Yeah.
But with the horsey folk and the horsey brigade, they're all so accepting of it.
Absolutely brilliant.
And, well, I think you're quite a big reason for part of that.
The horse world is brilliant. I mean, for that, you know, they don't care. They don't ask. And if they do, it's all positive. You know, I mean, you can be who you are. It's a bit like, I mean, the equestrian world is a bit like the arts. You kind of like feel it's the way, you know, you can be yourself. And I could be. And I didn't have to justify myself. I didn't have to feel any shame in it ever growing up. And it goes back to, like I said to you guys earlier, like when my friend was like, what are you doing tonight? And I said, oh, we're doing a podcast. We're looking forward to it. It's a load of mates. It'll all be fun. Probably talk about being, you know, a gay question or whatever. So how do you feel about that? And I'm like, well, I don't know, because I don't ever think about it. Because I don't need to. Because I've never had to.
Yeah.
And I'm so lucky. And I know that lots of people aren't lucky. Or don't feel they can be. But
did you have any... Did you struggle at all when you came out to, like, family or friends? Or...
No, because bear in mind also, like, I have moved to live in the UK. So, I mean, I don't have... when I moved here, I didn't have a huge group of friends. Mm. Don't have family here, really. So I could just be very, very quiet and just get on with my life. And so, no, not at all. I remember when it first sort of became apparent, and that was I had a girlfriend in my 20s, early 20s. And then when I met somebody that I wanted to have a relationship with, I told her. And I had started my job then at Dr. B's. And I told her on the telephone, and she came round to the house. I remember there was a knock at the door, and I opened the door, and she slapped me around the face hard. And was like, that's for lying. And I was ashamed, and I felt really bad about what had happened. And but thankfully, I'd been honest before it became terribly serious. So I don't know if any of you remember this, but there was a radio show called, it was on every day, and Simon Bates did it.
Yeah.
What was it called? Oh, I can't remember what it was. Anyway, it was a 10-minute show every day on Radio 1.
And I can't think what it was called.
We were all, I've got to remember this name in a minute.
Hang on, I'll look it
Google.
Up.
Yeah, Google it, because Our Tune it was called.
Oh, there we go, Our Tune.
Our Tune. So every day at 10 o'clock, Our Tune would come on. And it was a 10-minute sob story. It could be somebody that was really ill, somebody that lost their husband, their wife, boyfriend, girlfriend splitting up, boyfriend, girlfriend splitting up, I mean, losing a child. I mean, there were all sorts of stories. It was incredible. So anyway, I'd opened the door. I'd been slapped around the face, told what I was. And about a few weeks later, it was my very first Grand Prix at Dr. B. So we were in the horse box and we were going to Stoneleigh. And so in those days, we used to have a selection trial in March every year. And so anybody who wanted to be on the British team would go to Stoneleigh and do the selection trial. And basically, it was almost like the top five from the selection trial in March would go on and compete around the world, Europe, really. And then the top four would be selected for the team. So it was a big thing. I'd been working for Dr. B for 6 months and I had never ridden Grand Prix and I was due to go and ride there. So we were driving to Stoneleigh and I listened to our tune every day. I mean, me, the grooms, when it was 10 o'clock, we'd be like, tack room, tack room. We'd all run into the tack room. And then we'd all sit there like this, waiting. And we'd listen to the story and we'd either cry, laugh. And then they always played their song at the end of it that meant something about this drama that had happened.
Oh, God, I think I can know where this is going.
So we're driving. Well, I'm not, thankfully. I mean, we had somebody else driving the lorry, but I'm sat next to the driver and my groom sat next to me and we're driving along. So I'm about to do my first Grand Prix and 10 o'clock comes on and our tune comes on. And anyway, the story starts. And I'm like, looking out the window, and listening to the story. And it was a girl telling a story about falling in love with a boy. Boy turns out to be gay. Boy was obviously suppressed about being gay because he came from a small island. And it's going on. And we're all... and everyone's looking and I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Don't say my name. This is me. So anyway, like, and then I can't remember. I thankfully cannot remember the tune actually that she put on, but it was a very sad tune. And I got to Stoneleigh and I got out of the lorry and I remember my friends coming over looking at me going, was that you on our tune? And I'm like, no, please. And everyone like, was that you? Is that you? So that is how, like, in a way, I was outed, as you like. So roll on 2 years later, and so that was 1990, and I would go to the World Games. Nothing, there was nothing said, nothing in the press, nothing in anything about those days. In 1992, I get a phone call going, after selection, congratulations on being, a gay sportsman. And, you're going to the Olympics, can we come and interview you? And I was like, how do you know I'm gay? I mean, I know that sounds weird to a lot of people, but I mean, I was like, my life isn't out there.
Yeah.
Like my friends might know, but how do you know? I mean, why am I getting calls from the press? Anyway, I just thought, take it on the chin and get on with it. And, this is the way it's going to be. And it was somebody else. It was actually an American rider that had given a load of names that he knew. That he thought or knew was gay, and he gave them to the press and said, these are gay people competing. I mean, in a way, it all turned out to be, because it was all about promotion. I mean, it was all about, like, anybody can be at the Olympic Games. It's not just about these fabulous, muscular athletes or these gorgeous girls that are all, like 6 foot and throwing javelins and running everywhere. And, I mean, it is for everybody, the best go, whatever you are. So in a way, I thought, well, it's too late now because... that's what's been given to them. But then you roll on London 2012, and I had an interview to do with a fairly major paper after we won gold. And I went in, and she was a really nice girl. We sat, we chatted and everything, and talked about how dressage had come so far, and obviously we won gold, and the big thing. And then at the end, she says to me, so I understand you're gay. So I said, yeah, it's true. So she said, do you have a partner? I said, no. I said, look, I said, I've been concentrating on Olympics this year. And I said, that's what my focus has been. And I've been doing this for a year. And, maybe when this is over, I can, get on and sort my life out. So the headline the next day in the major paper is nothing to do with this lovely Olympic gold medal that the team had won or anyone else. It just said, looking for love. That was the headline in the newspaper.
No way.
And I was... I should not have been ashamed, but you know, like my grandparents, who never quite got their heads around it.
That's not their fault. That
they didn't say anything to me,
thing.
And maybe they never read it. I don't know, but that was my first thought. So, I mean, there still is a bit of you that you're still like protecting people that you know might not understand.
And if you'd been straight, do you think that would have been the headline?
It couldn't have been, no.
So it's only
absolutely not.
So if you'd have said that and you'd been straight, you were looking for love.
Yeah, it's almost like you can't find love. A straight person can, or you know, so or they'll. Yeah, I didn't even know what the relevance was to do I have a partner? You know, I mean, at the end of the day, we're there competing. You're talking about, but it's you know what I mean. Every year that evolves after that becomes normal. And like I said, I've always, you know, sometimes I think you will probably, you know, feel what I do, as in like sometimes you're saying somebody's not comfortable with me. But somebody could not be comfortable with you for other reasons, or you for other reasons.
He does take his top off a lot. It makes everyone uncomfortable, but we enjoy it.
Or very comfortable.
Yeah. Or it gives him a lot of following. So, I mean, on the other hand, we'd all like that about our followers, but I don't have the top to do that. But we all have qualities, don't we? I mean, but there are things that I sometimes feel like might make people...
I've found... that I don't really have that anymore. I don't think about it anymore. I don't really think about the being gay thing anymore.
No.
I mean, I definitely, like, in that time, definitely, I mean, it was like the most kind of, well, fairly awful thing, really, at the time. But ever since I kind of told my mum about it, and then I got outed, kind of not the same as you, not on the radio, but like I got outed by somebody at college, and so everybody knew, which was awful at the time, and actually probably the best thing to have happened, because it just, you know, at least everyone knew. And but like gradually, year on year, I've become more and more comfortable with it and with myself. But I think people have become more comfortable with it. So it's
they
totally
have.
Normal.
That is true. But I mean, you know, I don't, you know, I live out here in the sticks. Most of my friends are married, heterosexual people. Of course, I have gay friends as well. I mean, I have a huge amount of it. Nobody's uncomfortable. We all have a lovely time. Friends are your friends. I mean, I don't go around to people's houses. We never talk about things like this anymore, because we don't need to. Mm. And we shouldn't have to either. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, I like somebody, they like me, we're going to be friends. Mm. I don't like you, it's not for being whatever reason, or you don't like me. I mean, I don't have any, and I don't feel it anymore. And I'm thrilled for that, for anybody, not just in a question. I mean, let's face it. I mean, if you have a child, I mean, my father's come a long way. Because I mean, he found it really difficult in the beginning, and now he is like so cool with every single friend of mine, whatever they're like. And I've got some shockers.
So, why did you look at me when you said that?
I've got some shockers. But I love it. The older you get, the more accepted you get, the more you realise that, you know, somebody else's life is not your business. That's what goes straight into what I say. I mean, what other people think of me is not my business, and other people's lives isn't mine either.
Do you think, though, however much everyone is now becoming at this point in life, like you say, like nobody cares, everyone, but still, if you are that 8-year-old Simon, even in this day and age, is it still, no matter how comfortable everyone is with it?
We've had this discussion before about this podcast. Is like, you know, if I'd listened to something like this and listened to you talking like you're talking now, what you've already said, it would have really helped me. Because I obviously thought that it was just an absolute disaster, nightmare, and everyone was going to hate me, and it was going to be awful, and life was going to be terrible.
That is awful.
If I could have listened to what you've just said, or the conversation we've just had, I'd be like, oh, do you know what, actually?
It will be all right.
Be all right.
But you know,
because it's still the same now. Like, sorry to interrupt, but it's still the same now. Like, it's still hard to accept, I think, you know, even though it is a lot easier to come out now.
But we've probably had, you know, like, Tom Daley is probably the most successful, you know, Olympic gay guy, you know, of recent times. And he, you know, I am too old, as it were, to be an influence for younger people now. If I had been able to do this in 1992, that would have been... But he's been able to do that as a young person that is an inspiration, that, you know, has helped other people in sport. And I think he has hugely elevated the fact of it's just not an issue anymore. You know? And you've got, I mean,
Ollie Alexander. Yeah. Like, he's done a brilliant job with that as well, making it so that it's totally okay to be whoever you want to be. It's not just about being gay. It's all of it.
Yeah. And Tom Daley's made knitting cool.
he has
a lot of good things. That doesn't make me want to take it up, I might add.
I don't know. I was tempted. I was nearly influenced. But then I was just staring at his pets and I was like, I'm just going to watch you knit with your top off. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. I was with that.
You're obviously the favourite because all you're doing is tops off. So that's obviously like...
I'm allowed to window shop, all right? You disappointed me. So Jenny said me.
You have seen Ben without his top off. And I went... Well, only in pictures, And she was like, I mean, I just do anything I can to make him take a stop whenever.
Is it going to happen tomorrow? Maybe.
What are you doing tomorrow?
Maybe.
We're recording the live podcast.
So yeah.
Maybe he will.
So who's coming to that?
We have Gemma Tattersall. Or Stevens. I can't get over calling her that.
Gemma will be
I know.
Great.
Richard Davison.
Great. Where are you doing this? At the Ligon?
Well, it's in a pub, so Richard's getting in.
At the Ligon?
Ligon, yes. And then we have Austin O'Connor.
Fabulous.
And then the world will implode on itself because we have Lucinda Green. And she is going to be in a pub pod with
us. I mean, she is fabulous, Lucinda. She's random.
Fabulously bonkers.
She's random. She's what a great panel.
I know, right?
I mean, that is like...
I know.
I mean, you've got the swearer.
What, me?
You've got Gemma.
Yeah, Gemma, yes.
You've got the politician, Richard.
Yes.
You've got Lucinda, completely bonkers, and we'll just say it how it is. And who's the other one?
And Austin O'Connor for the Irish.
That's a bit of Irish in there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty...
And what we love
God, now I will have to start watching the podcast, because that will be... And you lot, all you...
And it's us.
We'll all be
exactly.
Oh, my God, that'll be...
The whole game.
That is an evening to...
Yes, in a pub. We are breaking boundaries here.
To be fair, I drink most of the time when we do it anyway.
Yeah.
I know, he's always
the best
drinking.
Way to say your thing, isn't it, though? Yeah. One drink in and you're like, okay, I wasn't going to say that, but I will.
So, we have a tradition on this podcast.
Right.
You get naked. No, I'm joking. Ben started drinking.
Ben, get out.
He's getting ready.
Or Shag, marry, avoid.
Shag, marry, avoid. No. But yeah, with your teammates. Shag, marry, avoid.
Oh, right. Oh my God. Don't ask me that.
through all of the Olympics. No, weird. First of all, it's what has annoyed you this week. We've all got to do it, not just you. Would you like to start?
No, you start. Because I've got to think about it. I mean, this week's halfway through, so there's not a lot of days.
Just what annoyed you in general. It could be over, because we do this every week, so ours is this week, but it can be... So mine, I've got a few. I always have a few. Simon
she has a list.
I always have a list. Mine is my chin hair. I do not know why. Okay, it doesn't have to be about this.
Lean in.
No, fuck off. I'm not leaning in. Right. Why? Since I turned 40.
Harry,
what?
Zoom
in. What about the trash?
What? Are the...
Zoom in. Zoom in. Wait.
Why, since I've turned... What evolutionary benefit does chin hair have for me at this point in time?
Winter coat.
Right. I'm not going to name names, but I was interviewing a very famous eventer at badminton one year.
Yeah.
And the problem with chin hair is, you guys don't have this problem. Problem with chin hair is you can't see it normally when you look in a mirror, and then you'll be in a lift and you know they've got that weird lighting, or you'll be in the car and you'll suddenly see it. And as I was interviewing this very famous woman, the lights suddenly hit her chin as it came out of the clouds. And I was like, oh, holy Jesus Christ, that is a lot.
I've got a new game. I want to guess who that is.
No, I can't. You're not allowed.
I think I know.
All I could think during this interview in badminton was, oh my God, I hope
she won. Had she won badminton?
No.
Has she ever won badminton?
She was there.
No. And I could think was, I hope I never get that much chin hair. And I was in my early 30s, chin hair free at this point in time. And I just remember thinking, Jesus, it's wispy. It's blowing in the wind. And I lost track. And there was some substantial chin hair there. I never thought this would happen to me. I was on the plane, in the toilets, you know, coming over from Canada. And the light in the toilets is quite aggressive, isn't it? Because you shut the door and the light goes on. I looked in the mirror and I literally let out a squeal. I was like, why has no one told me how much chin hair I've got? Now, all I can think about when people are talking to me is, can they see the chin hair?
Yes, it's lovely.
Oh, fuck.
It's fine. I like it.
So
it's a lovely
part. I talk a lot on this podcast because I'm getting perimenopausal. I'm sweating even now. And I'm like, oh, who cares? I'm so just going to be honest.
What's your ick then? Is that your ick?
No, this is my what's annoyed me.
Right.
And so if anyone's got any good advice for chin hair, I'm just going to throw it out there. I look back at old me, tight top, when I first met you, Jenny, and I'm like, wow, I was so slim and chin hairless. It's all going downhill, but fuck it.
But it does for everybody, surely.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I look at pictures of myself.
I have that with my greys, like on my chin hair.
Keep them shaved.
Grey hair on a man is distinguished. Grey chin hair on a woman is not. Right, Simon, what's annoyed you this week? He always starts off with, not much annoys me, and then goes on a rant.
Yeah, that really goes for it.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Not having enough hours in the day, I think.
That's always a good one because it's so true.
Yeah. That's true of everyone. Though.
Yeah, it is really
getting
annoying.
Tired annoys.
But also, it's also the getting tired is an added extra of that, but I whinged about that last week.
Yeah. It's all right. You can carry it on to this one. You're allowed to whinge about being tired.
But yeah, no, I'm quite tired.
Well, you're staying.
But I feel quite bad saying that in front of Carl because, like, you know, he does this teaching all the time. I've done 4 days in like the last 6 days of, like,
don't teaching. Feel bad. Don't like feel Carl bad. Said, the horse does all the work.
The only difference is that I set up an exercise for all 4 days, which was the same exercise, but I have to move the jump wings every single time for basically every single jump that they did. So, which is a bit different from the dressage.
Yeah.
Because it's like constantly.
It's just a sign to take up dressage.
That's a bad time, yeah.
Sign to take up dressage. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right, so I'm just not very good at it. So probably not.
Or you offer one free lesson at the end of the day, but that person has to hang out with you all day and move the jump wings.
Yes.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. That you can watch and learn all day.
The problem is, though, that I don't know what you like, but I'd be like, oh, it's not quite in the right place, so I'm just going to move it. Just half an inch.
Yeah, just like nudge.
So, yeah. And, yeah, not having enough hours in the day.
That's just, yeah. That's you every week. Right. Do you want to go before Ben or after Ben? How good's yours, Ben?
You go, quite good.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah, go on then.
So,
he
is off.
So we've just moved house. So, mum and dad have moved out of the farmhouse because me and George are having the baby. So they said, you know, why don't you take residence?
You nearly broke one of the glasses.
Why don't you take residence and, like, you know, post a move into another house because we're in a small house, too small for the baby. Don't go to a middle house. Come here. We'll go somewhere else. So we moved in, and the house is like old, like hundreds of years old are parts of it, and then it's been built outwards. And so there's loads of work that needs doing to it and stuff. It's a beautiful house, but, you know, like, we need to rewire it, we need to do all different bits. But there was one thing in the house, in the room that was to be the baby's room. It was the only room in the house with a brand new carpet in it. And then George was at her mum. I'm saying this because I'm hoping the baby will have come by the time this podcast is out. But then George and her mum and her auntie came to start looking at what needed to be decorated for the house. And then she sent me a message saying, brilliant, we've got loads done. We've ripped up the carpet in the child's room, measured it for a new one, and we're going shopping on Monday. And I was like, what?
How's that made you feel? Angry or sad or...
Scared. Because I was like, if the one carpet in the house I was sure about is gone, not even going... gone. What else are we doing to this house?
I'm going to take you to Birmingham at the weekend and we're going to buy you another carpet. There's a very good carpet shop up there. We've been there. Like, this whole house is done through Birmingham carpet shops. You'll be all right.
That's just the most random line I've ever heard. I'm taking you to Birmingham.
Well, I know. I've only been there because I went to look at carpets in Birmingham. So that's my advice.
He's very good at accents. Can you do a Birmingham accent?
Oh, like
a
Tommy Shelby. Birmingham's terrible.
Is it? Not as good as your Scottish. His Scottish accent's excellent.
Well, like, yeah, but that's the mash of opinion. Most Scots think that it's...
Do they understand you when you're speaking Scottish, or do they just give you that?
Well, my Scottish friends,
your Scottish friends
I've spoken to, you know, Grant... Grant McKenzie. I speak to him. No, I don't want to speak to him in my Scottish accent, but he's harder.
That's really good, and
he does say to me, it's not too bad, actually. But I've got other friends that are like, oh, actually, you need to swear more. Like, if you say the C word a lot more, then you sound more
or Scottish. Shut. Do you say shut?
Shut, not so much. But like, if you say then like...
That'll be edited out.
We might need to beep that
makes you sound really Scottish.
Even I haven't dropped the C word.
I'm friends, not obviously. I'm friends with Grant's sister, Lee. So Lee comes in. So Lee gets so pissed with me because I every Scottish thing on Instagram that makes me wet myself because I love it, I send it to her and she's just like, I never get a kiss back on it. It's just like, what is that? Or why are you sending me that? I'm like, well, you're Scottish. Surely you must think it's funny. I mean, I laugh whenever I hear the accent. And, you know, like, why can't you? But they don't laugh like we do about Scots.
No, I'm married to one. Trust me. Yeah.
I mean, I used to go and do clinics up there and I would do 10 or 11 lessons a day. This is years ago. And I used to teach them all in Scottish. I didn't speak to one of them in English. And I got used to the fact I'd get off the plane and start speaking Scottish and then I would get
go
back
on. Let's hear your Scottish accent.
No,
oh my goodness, come on, Carl.
No, Lee will tell you it's terrible. So Grant probably absolutely thinks yours is marvellous, but Lee would say mine's dreadful.
But Grant's one of my bestest.
But that is yours is good.
It is really good.
Well, that all, kind of like
of, more, all my English it. Friends say that it's good.
And his French is very good as well. It's quite sexy.
English French, frongly.
Yeah.
No, just the French accent.
Go on, live it a little
yeah.
bit
in English.
Yeah.
Oh God!
I
do not know what to say. I'm so grateful to you for helping me when I was very young.
Okay, that's quite inspirational for me because I do loads of accents. I love that. I'm not doing any on this.
I was teaching in Northern Ireland at the weekend, and I was told that my Northern Irish accent's not very good.
See, I have an Irish lady in the yard, so I mean, I speak Irish to her every day. I teach a lot of Scots, I speak Scottish, I speak Welsh, and I speak.
Oh, English. Welsh! So Welsh, American.
Welsh is hard. Go on, have a go at Welsh.
Do you do South African?
Well, I do, but if you think, I'm actually from the Channel Islands, so if you've ever been to the Channel Islands, our accent
is a bit South African.
So a lot of people think, I mean, I've dropped it, so because I've lived it too long now. So, but my friends and people speak with a bit of a South African twang. So that's why, you know, you'd never say to somebody, are you from the Channel Islands? You say, are you from South Africa?
Oh.
Yeah. So that's what we used to ask us. Yeah, but I don't speak anymore. Anyway. But then, funny enough, my family moved there, so they're all out there.
Can you do Barbados?
I do, because I've got a girl from Trinidad and Tobago that works for me. So she has really helped me. I sound a bit like Precious from Little Britain when I'm doing it, so... I mean, if any of you remember that, so it's like she laughs, but only she would. I mean, only her and I laugh about it. But yeah, so I've had to watch Precious a lot of Little Britain.
Do you find that, like, so obviously you've got these people that work for you, because I get it sometimes when I spend a lot of time with somebody with an accent, I morph into their accent or the way that they speak. Like, I've got Maggie, who is basically Devon, and or Mr. Grieve. No, I can't do it. But I start like my lover. Yeah, exactly. That's it.
I'm from Devon.
If you either have an ear for it or you don't, it's like earlier when he said farmer, and I was like, oh, but you're not from Devon, but you just said farmer. So that I know there's a bit of Devon in there somewhere, isn't there? So I know that just what that word you said. But it's the first thing I thought when you said it. I went, oh, she's from Devon. Oh no, I wasn't going to swear on the podcast either. Anyway, there we go. My mission.
Go on, we've been going for ages. What has annoyed you this week?
We're only in 3 days of this week, so literally, I can say the yard's run smoothly, the lessons have all gone well. I did go out for dinner one night and had a pork chop and they didn't crisp up my fat.
Oh.
Criminal.
Because I love pork, right? I do.
Pork belly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I had to cut it off because they hadn't crisped it, so
did
I was
you
like...
bend it back?
No.
Save it for the dog?
I did say everything. I said, aren't you supposed to crisp up the pork? So they were like, no, if you just know, we just leave it on, you just eat the pork. So that really...
That was disappointing.
...ruined my night this week. Which I know is very minor compared to what's going on in the world, but, you know, pork was great, but the natural fat was terrible.
I just have an image.
But I did bring it home for my dogs.
I was going to say,
we all shared it.
In bed late at night on TripAdvisor, specs halfway down his nose.
Don't go exactly.
Not Chris.
I wouldn't see. I would never write about things like that. I don't.
Very distressing interaction.
Would you?
That's another thing I've learned in life: don't go back.
So would you? You wouldn't be the sort of person that would send something back. Food-wise.
No.
Yeah, no.
No, definitely not. I was taught that. I was also
taught that. That was absolutely lovely. Thanks so much.
Never coming back.
Right, we have been going for a very long time. Poor Harry is like, oh my God, my legs are killing
me. Harry's starving.
Yeah, we
do actually have to cook dinner. Yes. We are cooking dinner for you guys.
So we're going to end. We all know what our equestrian pet peeves are for anyone who is listening to the podcast for the first time. Go back and listen to our episodes. Oh, you're poking me. What?
Lord.
Being poked by Carl Hester. Well, it's
actually because I do
dream.
Now realise, like you said, what annoys you this week. And, oh. You know, I've just done a piece about a piece of poor, which is totally ridiculous. But actually, what I was going to say, because you were doing icks as well. So what I was going to say was, it's actually teaching people. And, you know, because we all have headphones now. So you teach somebody and they talk back to you. And teaching people that talk to their horses like they know what English language means. I mean, you need to give your horse a half hole, right? That's from my mouth.
Yeah.
From their mouth to the horse. You need to stop pulling. Stop pulling. Stop pulling. The horse doesn't understand English. You've got to, like, transfer your words to your body. It's your body that will tell the horse to do that. Or you need to bend left more on that circle. They say to the horse, bend left, bend left, bend left. I love it because I hear things now, because I didn't teach with a microphone for over 20 years and now I teach with a microphone. I'm now hearing people saying these things all the time. And that's actually, that's what I'd like to say more than the pork chop thing.
Mine's just one way, like, because when I'm teaching jumping, I have like earpieces and they can hear me, but I can't hear them. And they get really, really worried about it. They're like, well, can you hear me as well? Yeah. I'm like, no, you can literally swear under your breath as much like you can say how awful I am. I won't hear
so
it.
So my wish for 2025 is please communicate through your body, your arms and your reins, not your mouth.
It's so funny that you say it, because one of my big rules when I teach people liberty is if we talk about having like verbal cues or sound cues, and one of them is that you're not allowed to use a word you understand for a cue.
Yeah, interesting.
So, like, for, like, me, my backup cue for a horse is ch, because there's no point in saying back. Because if you use a word that you understand, a tiny part of your brain thinks the horse should understand. Mm. And, like, you see people stood by the side of the lorry, Bob the Cob stood on the dandy brush, and they go, move over, Bob, and he doesn't. So then they, boof, whack him, and you're like, whoa. You didn't explain.
Yeah, Bob has no idea.
It's absolutely bang. Like, yeah. I couldn't agree with you more on that. It's a, if you speak to them, you'll think that. Do you know what I mean? You think that they understand, and then that can build resentment within the partnership.
Very good point.
I've just realised that's actually one of my equestrian icks, is people who click for their horses when they're trying to move. So you know, you go in the stable and you push them back, and they click, whereas it's normally a forward motion, and they're going.
At the
same time as pushing them back, and I'm like, well, you're clicking and you're saying push back. And I'm like, oh my God, it really winds
me up. Don't ask for tea and be disappointed, do you know, if you don't get coffee.
Wow. Right, well, we could chat for hours, but instead you're just going to have to come back on. I feel like this is kind of all the stuff I've always wanted to chat to you about, but we've always been at an Olympics or something, and you're not allowed to say shit at the Olympics, so... thank you so much.
No, thank
and
you.
And thank you for letting us come into your home.
Thank you.
It's so nice to see the dogs. And...
We'll carry on the night. Let's...
Yes, we are going to carry on. But all that is left to say, our podcast is sponsored by Charles Owen, who we absolutely love and adore. And we hope you've enjoyed it. If this is your first time tuning in because you're listening because it's Carl, I promise you all the other episodes are great. Like, share, follow. I'm learning all this stuff, Carl. I have no idea what I'm doing. But Carl, all that is left to say... is shut up and ride.
I will. Thank you very much.